A very good evening to you, faithful listeners of Eagle FM and faithful listeners of Life Lessons every Saturday right here on your number one talk radio station. Same time, same place. That is Saturday, 1900 hours up until 2100 hours, where we bring you an interesting topic that we can reflect on and talk about and just ponder on it and the things that are happening. Of course, this is Life Lessons. I am your host, Dafa Happy Juju, here to keep you company yet again. So thank you for tuning in as you join me as you're going to have this conversation. So tonight, I don't have a guest in studio. It's all me, okay? And I have so much in store for you, okay? So interestingly, this past week, or let me see, this past few weeks, let me put it like that. So tonight we are talking about reflecting on mourning, on funeral arrangements. You know, let's talk about death. Let's talk about death of a loved ones. Let's talk about the preparations that goes behind it. Let's talk about the things that we need to put away with. Let's talk about the exaggerations that we are doing. Let's talk about the things that maybe we should be doing, you know. And I hope that you will also come and share your nuggets with me. You come and share your wisdom, your knowledge, reflecting on the things that you did or you people did, and that you now realize that, wait, we should have actually done better. Is my volume really okay? Anyway, yeah, so that's what we're going to be talking about this evening. And for me, I will be reflecting on my grandfather's funeral. So interestingly, or unfortunately, or also, I'm also thankful, you know, I'm thanking God as well for my grandfather, because he was 102 years old. And apparently, because when they went to do their ID, they exchanged with his friend, or is it his brother? And so he gave his, years to the year he was born to the younger brother, because he was very petite, apparently, when he was very small. So, in actual fact, he died at the age of 104. My grandfather died at the age of 104. And so we held the funeral last week, Saturday, at our home village, and where, family, loved ones, neighbors were gathered together for my grandfather's funeral. People were reflecting, of course, and it has been preparations for the whole of the week. Now, one particular thing, or I can almost say theme, for my grandfather's funeral was celebrating the life of David Chilongo. That was the theme about it, celebrating his life, you know. And we, the grand children, and he had so many grandkids, up to 40 something, and perhaps counting. And also he had 50, but you know, sometimes you can't really get to the exact amount. Perhaps this one didn't give, you know, their name and stuff like that. So he had 51 grandkids and 40 something great grandkids. Okay. Great grandkids. So he, was married to my grandmother, and my grandmother is still alive, and she's 90 something. Not exactly sure now, but she's 90 something, and they've been together for so many years. So he is my mom's father, and my grandmother is my mom's mom. So yeah. So a lot of us were reflecting on my grandfather's funeral, and we're very grateful, you know. And I came to understand that some people were not really perhaps fond of the term of us saying we are grateful. We were thanking God for the life of our grandfather, for the fact that he gave us our grandfather up until the age of 104. And I did hear someone say, well, we're saying, but in a shambo, we're saying thank you, but we're not thankful, because this is not the time to be grateful. No. You know how we are told that in everything give thanks unto the Lord, whether good or bad, we ought to be grateful. You know, we have to look at the beautiful side, at the bright side, you know, and be appreciative. How many people actually lose their fathers, you know, at a very young age? A lot of people don't even grow up with their dads. And you, here you are, you grew up with your grandfather. Let me just try and get another one. Yeah. So, and here you are, you grew up with your grandfather, you got to know your grandfather, you had children and they got to meet their grandfather or their, you know, it was just something to really appreciate the Lord for having granted us our grandfather to actually be able to impact the wisdom, the knowledge, the counsel that he did, you know. And one thing a lot of people were actually talking about was the fact that he was a very neat man. And indeed, my grandfather was a very, very neat man. Very, very neat man. You know, he would wash our clothes. Back then, as I was young, he would wash our clothes literally, and he would bath us, you know, when we were small. You know, the world wasn't the way it is now, where you wouldn't even allow anyone to bath your child or something like that. But our grandfather bathed us. I remember he would wash our underwears after actually bathing us, me and my cousins, and we actually a lot. And apparently the time of some cousins of ours, it was majorly boys and one girl who was my grandfather's last born. And he and she and there was no gender roles. Everybody would do all things. Yeah. And so then when it came for our time, when I was born alongside my cousins, it was majorly girls. And perhaps there was only one boy, my other cousin. There was hardly boys. So it was majorly girls. So there were no gender roles either. We would go and kettle heading. We would really go out and do everything, you know, just everything that needs to be done without you being, it being said, you are a girl, you can't do this and all that, not. And, I think I should say luckily I then came to the city to school here. So I wasn't one who really liked or even loved, household chores, you know, at the village. I still don't, honestly, I still don't. Yeah. So, yeah. And so, yeah, it was actually very nice having my grandfather, teach us so many different things. He taught us many things, and my grandmother also taught us many things. There are certain things that my sister, my younger sister and my cousins know that I don't know, such as making omalodu, such as making ojove, such as, what else? You know, those things. I was just never a fan. I still am not. And I'm not saying, or justify myself or whatever, but I think everybody has their role, you know, everybody has their passions. And I, while we're actually at this topic, I realize when we force kids to do things that they don't really want, you know, they just deliver the bare minimum. But when you give the child to do what they are very good at and they're passionate about, they do a good job. And also when you're just giving them to do things that they're not passionate about, they become frustrated, and you know, you'll just be ever trying to push them to do that, and they'll just be very frustrated. I've learned this from my son. Now, my son, there are certain things that he just doesn't like to do. I think he's a lot like me. There are certain things that he doesn't do, but cooking, that he loves, and he's only 11 years old. He can cook really good pap that everybody can eat, like even guests can eat that. And he can make very good sauce, like chicken. I've taught him how to do that, and he's very good at that, and he's passionate about it. If somebody has to peel the butternut and you give it to another sibling, he'll be very upset. He wants to be the one to peel the butternut. And you know how hard it is to actually peel a butternut. He wants to do those things. Ah, wash, talk about, going wash clothes with your brother. Then it's a hassle. Going, you know, other stuff. It's not really something that he will be interested in doing. But I've come to realize cooking is something that he's very passionate about. And I realized that, hold on, wait. Then maybe I should focus on, you know, you are very good at this and you like doing this. You do this. And then since you, my firstborn son, loves washing, then you do this. You know, that type of thing. I'm just picking that up now so that I can just avoid the frustrations and the having to say, why didn't you do this? You're supposed to do that. So yeah, that's something I've also picked up. Anyway, so yeah, back to, reflecting on my grandfather. And so then this man was a very, oh, and of course he was this person who would, what do you call it? Scold a lot. My grandfather would scold a lot, so much that my aunt picked that up from him. And I grew up with my aunt also at one point in the city. And I, you know, there are certain characters that, in your family that are, you know, a trait in your family, and then they just rub off you. Sometimes not so good characters. And also, so then I would also scold my kids, you know, here and there, scold them. And then literally to a point where I started to pray about it. I'm like, I don't want to be that person. And also beating. Yeah, he would beat. He would beat. And apparently in our era, we came in an era where he's now old. He wouldn't beat us anymore. Of course, we did receive our beatings in there, but not as majorly, as much as the other cousins did, or as his own children did and stuff like that. So, yeah. And I'm thankful for that also, that, yeah, he was really somebody who, yeah, he doesn't tolerate nonsense. He doesn't tolerate rubbish. He's a very neat man. You have to keep yourself clean. You have to keep the house clean. And I love those qualities about him that have rubbed off of me, about cleanliness, you know. And of course, there were still my cousins who are just not really that tidy. I remember when we would stay together with my cousins, you know, growing up, varsity lives, we are renting. I will have my, since I had my own single bed, I would wash my blankets here and there, and they would wash their blankets like maybe after 2 months, my goodness. And you're just like, what? Maybe after 3 months, I don't know, something like, but it would be so long, you know, a long time would pass before they actually wash their blankets and stuff like that. And yeah, and my aunt is a very, very neat person, you know. So yeah, those, this is just certain characteristics about him. And he was a man of counsel. He would really counsel you to say, don't do this, do this, you know. He had really, really good advice, and everybody was actually bringing that out. And I've come also to realize that, you know, it's interesting how when you die, you know, what you're all about becomes, you know, it makes more sense, I guess. What you're saying makes, what you used to say makes more impact. Let me put it like that. What you used to do or say to the people, has more impact, I guess, you know. So yeah, interestingly, so, anyway, never mind. I got a bit of a distraction, but yeah, let's get back to normal. So yeah, it's just interesting how when you die, people tend to take your words that you gave to them seriously, you know, how what you said now makes more sense. What you say now, people want kind of like to put it into practice. And one biggest fear that my grandfather was really afraid of, and also my grandmother is, they're always afraid of our family member, of when they die, the family will go their way. Cousins, will no longer really keep in touch. Aunties and uncles and wives. Because, I mean, every family, I don't know. Let me not talk about other people's family. I've only been in that, you know. So, and how, you know, they will see the misunderstandings and sometimes the quarrels, you know, the fights between cousins and aunties and uncles while they are still alive. And I think they are also very much concerned to say, but when we do go, you know, I know how my grandfather will call me and say, did you check up on your cousin? When last did you see them? You know, stuff like that. And yes, you know, and sometimes you would literally call just, I think also so that when grandfather calls you again and asks you, did you check up on who, you actually kind of like did your part, and you say, yes, you did, you know, stuff like that. So that's one of the greatest fears that they actually, had, was that maybe when, not maybe, when they do die, we're not going to have that closeness again. We're not going to be, in touch with each other anymore, that we're just going to be separated and whatnot. And I think, I did get to see my speech, and it was kind of like, you know, how you would plan something in your head. You know, I'm the type of person, I was planning if it, should I be given opportunity to actually say something, what I was going to say. Of course, I told jokes of what my grandfather used to do. I reflected also on his counsel and his wisdom and his training towards us. And yeah, you know, just who he was and what he was there for. And of course, I took the advantage of the opportunity to also share scriptures on in regards to burial and mourning, you know, and whatnot. Because at the end of the day, you have to remind people that, hey, you know what? Death is inevitable. We're all going to die one day, one fine day. All of us are going to die as much as we, and of course, we don't prepare for it. But I think I really want to say that I don't want to be afraid to die. I would rather be afraid of where am I going when I die, you know? That's the part where I want to be concerned with. Not really that I die. Yeah. So yeah, so I did, share that. And interestingly, I arrived right at the day of the memorial, and one auntie who knows me very well that I guess, just give me a mic and I'll do the talking. So she was like, if I want to say something, and I was like, yeah, I would want to say something. And when I was called, I was like, wait, that was so very fast. So I did manage to say something. And my grandmother, you know, I was very strong. I didn't cry. You know, my grandfather was ill. He had a short illness, and since he has been a very hardworking man. When I say hardworking man, I mean the man is hardworking, very hardworking. He go out to plow. He go out to take care of the kettles. He go out to do something. Always he wakes up. He's the first one to wake up and put tea, you know, for everyone to drink. Yes. And he will clean my grandmother's kitchen. And you know how Mambo kitchen is with the three stoves and whatnot. And he will always complain that apparently, we are not neat people. You know what I've come to conclude? I think my grandfather worked for a white man. And so, and you know, white people back then, they were so very neat. I don't know about now, but let me just say, you know, the time of colonialism, they were very neat people. And so, yeah, so that's where the cleanliness actually stemmed from. That's what I think. And it's really, really embedded in him, hey? So, yeah, and even clothes-wise, blankets-wise, I mean, the man was neat, you know, and guess what? Also, my aunt spoke about him at the funeral, and she said that he was not only neat as in wearing clean clothes. He was also very neat to the aspect of wearing clothes that he won't wear clothes that are not ironed. And mind you, we're at the village where there's no electricity. Ask me how he would iron his clothes. Actually, he had this old fashioned iron, which is, steel. Is it steel? Something like that, but it was really hard where you put charcoal in it. So, if there's maybe water boiling, and he will now get the charcoal and put it in it, and he will iron his clothes. And he will not only iron his clothes, he will iron my grandmother's clothes for church. He will iron our clothes as well. And if my aunt came around, he'll also iron her clothes. I don't really remember my mom giving him clothes to iron for her, but what my grandmother told me was that, when my mother used to go to school, you know, hostel school, apparently my grandfather, cause my mom is so bad at washing. My aunt is the opposite. My mom doesn't really do washing, okay? And luckily, since she's a teacher, okay, well, not anymore, but yeah, was a teacher, she would always have, maybe because also she didn't have the time, she always have somebody at home wash the clothes. And mind you, she would not wear clothes twice, you know? She's just like her father. She will wear something only once. So once, boom, in the mingi, or what you call it, where you put the clothes I need to go for laundry. So my mom, apparently, when she would go to school, my grandfather told her, focus on reading your books. Don't stress about washing your clothes. Just wear your clothes, pack them up, bring them home. I'll wash them. And you know, same. And so my grandmother was like, your grandfather was the one that spoiled your mom. So she wasn't used to washing her clothes. You bring them home so your father can wash. And apparently, and actually this I've come to realize, my mom was my grandfather's favorite daughter. And mind you, he had other so many kids. Oh, okay, wait. He had many boys and she was his first daughter. Okay. I only came to pick that up later on. Like, but why was my mom so special? You know, she was his first, daughter. And so, she was, Diddy's girl. I remember when my mom was working at another place and she would need to, you know, she, like when she would travel, cause she was working in a bush as a, at one point as a teacher, and she would now need to come home for the weekend, and we'll ask, maybe we came over for holiday that time. And then we'll ask my grandfather, "Grandfather, are you going to eat?" And he'll be like, "No, I'm only going to eat if, Nangula is here. Otherwise, I'm not gonna eat," you know, stuff like that. Then we will actually laugh about it, you know, but now reflecting on it, I do get it. And my mom spoke about how she was a small baby. My grandfather would come in there. Onjuo, you know, that room where the lady, the woman gave birth in stays. In Ashwamba, we say Omwali stays. So yeah, he would come there to look at the baby, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah, but that was my grandfather. Hey, I wish I had a picture to show you guys. But yeah, I wish I could show you guys a picture. Not really that I had a picture to show you, because I mean, this is radio, but I just mean like, I wish I could really, you know, bring out the picture itself. But yeah, so that was my grandfather. He was such a wonderful man. He was, he had his scoldings and whatnot. And one point my grandmother was not feeling well. And mind you, hey, my grandmother was a very sickly person, became a sickly person towards, at the end. She also kind of like sort of had asthma, something like that. Yeah, she was really sickly to a point she had to come to Windhoek to stay with my aunt, and my grandfather was in the north by herself. So interestingly, as my grandfather was in the north by himself, he would literally be sad, you know. I remember he was saying, "Oh, this kid, oh, this woman who got sick," you know, his beautiful wife. He'll be like, "Oh, that's my wife," but you won't put it like that, you know. He would say, he would refer to my grandmother as this woman, like in a Chwambo, like that. He would never call her by name, of course, and stuff like that. So he would talk about how she's not in the house, and so he's suffering. Apparently we are suffering him. We are, I don't know. I could see the longing in him, longing for my grandmother. And then my grandmother, at one point when she came back from Windhoek back home, and then again, one time where she was really sick and she needed to be closer to hospitals where there is car, you know. So she had to come over to our hometown instead of the village. My grandfather, out of nowhere, you know, he would just come from the village and come and visit his wife. He would go to the shops, of course, and go and buy her some stuff. He'll buy her sweets, because my grandmother loves it. He would buy her some salad. You know, he would just buy her something and bring to her. And I was like, this kind of love. Oh. This kind of love better locate me. You understand? Where you have your person until eternity, you know? Where you officially say, "Until death do us part." I mean, those two. And you know what? My grandmother had, sometimes she would really be harsh to my grandfather. Maybe my grandfather would say something and she would answer him harshly, and he would be like, "Oh, you, sometimes you just answer me very harshly. Oh, I know," you know, stuff like that. And you know, I'm telling you, I kid you not, never once did I see my grandmother and my grandfather, holding grudge against each other, never bitter towards each other because this. Of course, I saw them arguing. Sometimes they'll be sitting. My grandmother would be, doing what now? Engongo, doing something, you know, making her basket, weaving her basket. And my grandfather would be sitting there next to her and they'll be talking, you know, you see them disagreeing, you know. But my grandfather was always a soft one. He would always complain that, yeah, my grandmother sometimes says harsh words to him, blah, blah, blah. And they'll just resume back to normal. They never, you know, they were never bitter towards each other. Like, we're not talking to each other because we had a fallout or that disrespect. You know, you get some. I saw one of our neighbors. Well, she's now a widow. She used to be very rude to her husband, even in front of her elder children. She was very rude, you know, to him. And I was like, That is so wrong. How do you answer your husband like that? I get that you probably did something that is very awful and whatnot, but even in fact of in front of your adult children, what are you teaching them? You're actually teaching them that, you know what, when you get married and your husband, you and your husband, you are disagreeing, just go ahead and be rude and disrespectful. I know. So that's something that my grandparents, didn't have. And that's something that I don't have either, like holding grudges and being bitter towards people. I can't do that. I can't, like, we maybe have a disagreement or we have an argument and I'm not talking to you for like days or, you know, I'm not talking, I know. I found it very difficult now growing up and meeting people who are like that. I'll be the one to sort of like beg for us to talk and whatnot, because I found it so painful. And because of that also, you know, there were times when I would argue. I remember particularly one time I argued with my cousin, another time I argued with my sister, and they held grudges for long. As much as I tried to, you know, to apologize and everything. And this is my sister, not from my mom's side, because this is from my, you know, my grandfather from my mom's side, sister from my dad's side. So she didn't grow up in that same environment. Still in our house, that's not something that we really, that's something, it's just something that's not really in us, you know, like it's not something that we grew up with, something we know. So this my sister, since she didn't grow up in that household, of course, she's not related to me on my mom's side, but to my dad's side. So we had that, fallout. But wait, the other cousin actually grew up from my grandfather's side. Yeah. So it was so painful for me, you know, having to I keep saying sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. I said this. And I was kind of like honest and truthful, but yeah, I guess sometimes the truth really hurts. So from there on, I just told myself, I don't think I want to argue with anyone. You know, I don't want to have disagreements with anyone and have to say the truth to them to a point where, you know, we're not going to be talking terms as much as I try to apologize. And I don't want to be in bitterness or anyone bitter in bitterness or with me. So it was really a moment of reflection, gratefulness for our grandfather having been with us for that long time. I really reflected and appreciated, you know, I think I was looking beyond death. I was looking at the time that we were given with our grandfather. I was looking at the time that, and I think I get this from my grandmother. Okay. My grandmother is that type of person, a woman of faith, you know, a woman that accepts whatever situation comes our way. She has held her own principles. She has let go of certain cultural things that she's just not embedded in anymore. And she is, because my grandmother from her family, her siblings died and she became the only grandmother around, that my cousins from other sides, you know, they will also come to her because their moms died. And so she's now, you know, that grandmother, like the oldest person around that they can seek advice from. And she's that person who's really grounded, has faith, you know. And even in mourning, let me tell you all, there's one thing I really appreciated. But I was very skeptical to say, when I go to the funeral house, the things that people will be doing, you know, you have already put courage in yourself to say, wait, I appreciate everything that the Lord has done for us in regards to our grandfather being alive. I mean, being alive for that time and taking care of us. And my last born son, I like to say my last born son was my grandmother, my grandfather's last born child. By that, or last born great, yes, they have other great kids, right? Great grandkids. But he was the one that they raised, because I remember, my two boys going to stay with my grandmother and my grandfather, even in their old age. I think they were 80 and 90 at the time. Yes, 80 and 90 at the time, because I had to go back to school. And, there was actually, the kids were supposed to go with to my mom, but they were alone in the house and they wanted kids. And, my last born son had that very special place in my grandfather's heart. You know, I think because of that. So really, reflecting on this, my grandfather's funeral, I appreciate also at the mourning house that there wasn't this, foolish cries. Okay. And I really want to put it like that. You know, these foolish cries where people will come to the mourning house and come in, oh, kanakange, oh, my mother, oh, you know, like, oh, my grandfather, why? You know, this wailing, wailing of uncontrollness, like, hi, isn't, if you cry like that, is a person going to wake up? Huh? Are you going to bring them back to life if you cry? Like, I get that sometimes we are in pain, but there's just some, you know, some foolish mourning that is not necessary. Like, you know, there are people who are wounded at the funeral that are more relatives to the person who died than you, who is a distant, far away cousin, or I don't know, or, you know, and you are coming, when you come to the mourning house, you maybe come on day 3 or day 5, you already found people cried and stopped, and you are coming to awaken their tears again. Oh, thank God. I really appreciate that. That wasn't the, in fact, it was only, I remember the lady who was the master of ceremony. She was a retired teacher herself, and she said something. She said, As we are mourning, let's mourn, cautiously. You know, there are people who are more affected by this than some, so let's mourn with caution. And I'm telling you, there was no this, foolish crying. I just remember, one cousin of mine who actually was crying. My grandfather. Well, okay. Yeah. But I'm not saying the mother, people were crying. Okay. But they were not crying that wailing, you know, that making noise. That was that what, you know, and even my mom and my aunt, they were so really holding it together. And I don't think it's just that they were holding it together. I think, they accepted as well. We were really in a grateful spirit. Really. We, as much as we were mourning our grandfather, and almost everybody who was giving a speech was like, you know, as much as we are mourning our grandfather, we're really in a grateful spirit to say, hey, you know, we appreciate, we are celebrating the life of old David. You know, we appreciate how he has been with us for this 104 years. And it's just my desire that it's not just, if another death comes our way as a family that we have to deal with, not just because my grandfather was 104, but I pray that, even if somebody was 50, was 60, we will still be really composed and say, you know what? We appreciate the time that this person spent with us. You know, the little that they were able to impact in our lives, whether it's advice, you know, whether it's financial help. Or physical help, you know. So yeah, that's really one takeaway point that I really appreciate. And another thing also is that, you get to meet your cousins, you know, some cousins you haven't seen them in a very long time. You lost touch with them, and some you actually don't know. Some you didn't actually know that you guys are related. So you get to meet your cousins, you get to meet your aunties. You get to, you know, take pictures with them again, and you so that you can also appreciate them. It's only when a person dies that, wait, you wish you had pictures with a person, or you wish you had so many pictures with them, something like that and whatnot. So the journey, my journey to the north was very, successful. I went with a private vehicle, family friend, and came back with it. Now, on my way to the north, okay, we passed one service in Oshawarongo, and luckily we didn't pass just any service. I wish I could actually remember the service name so I can give a really good shout out about it. So we passed this particular service station, and mind you, I went into the bathroom. So my handbag, I had a small handbag, and I have two phones. One is a new phone and one is an old phone. So I don't even use the old phone anymore. So because the old phone was taking up space because it's small handbag, I happened to put the new phone. I took out the new phone, and in the bathroom, I put it there, way on top of the toilet paper as I used the bathroom. And after I finished, I went to wash my hands, and something in my heart was like, I forgot something. So I turned back and I only saw toilet paper. So okay, I was like, I didn't forget anything. So then we went. And we drove, and it was only the three of us in the car, and I had the whole space, you know, and it's a double cab, so I had the whole space, at the back by myself, and the two drivers were alternating though in front. So then, as we drove about 15 minutes out of Oshawarongo, I remembered, I don't have my phone. So then I asked the family friend to actually dial it, and I was like, no, wait, don't call it. And then I was about to panic, and I said a prayer, a short one. And something just assured me, like, I should be peaceful. I'll have my phone. Okay. Then I was like, okay, let me be peaceful. And then we drove back. As we were driving back, in my head, I was just reflecting because I didn't want to panic. The moment you panic, you know, everything just goes out of the window. It's like, it's, you know, you scatter yourself. It's just a mess. So I had that confidence and that calmness. And I was like, in my head, I was just like, you know, just reflecting on how people gave testimonies in church about how they lost their phones and they got it back, how the driver called back, or this other one who had lost it and then because he and then he had gotten another one because he had bought it. Was it on credit or something like that? And it was insured or something. Yeah. So I was just like, you know, I've heard people give testimonies about their phones lost and they had it. And I just had this calmness in me. So then we got to the service and when I went into the bathroom, the phone wasn't there and it was early morning, like about 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock. It was very early in the morning. And the lady and the man who was there, they were not there. So there were new people coming in. I'm like, now where are they? We just here a while ago. And one of the lady was like, go ask at the management, ask inside. Sometimes lost phones are, actually she was like, lost phones are taken inside. So then we went, we went actually. And I, as I walked in, I was like, hi, I forgot my phone in the bathroom. And then she was like, oh, you know, and then she mentioned the type of phone. And I was like, yes. And then the lady brought it. And then the family friend is opposite sex. So he was standing right next to me and he was facing the other side. And boom, here I am holding him so tight. And I was like, oh, I'm so happy. Like, I knew it. I just had this calmness in me. Like, I should be calm and whatnot. And so then the lady gave it to me and I was like, can I give you a tight hug? Because I mean, I don't want to be arguing the opposite sex. So please, you know, and this is female to female. So I knew I was going to give her this tight hug of gratitudeness. And I gave her such a tight hug and she was like, yeah, the guy who brought the phone was like, people don't take care of their phones, hey. You know, and I wanted to thank him in person, you know, but he wasn't there. Of course, I left him a small token of, you know, appreciation for, and the lady was like, oh, he would really appreciate it. And so we drove off. I had my phone back and we drove off. And right there, you know, that moment, that right there gave me assurance that this is going to be a successful journey going and coming back. I don't know. There are certain things that just happens, you know, that gives you that, like, I'm with you type of presence. I'm going with you. You're fine. You know, that gave me that confidence and that assurance. And I was very calm and I was very happy and very grateful. And so we traveled and we went and yeah. And of course, arrives, like I said, and then I gave my speech, a short speech. And the following day was now the day for the burial. And I'm also very appreciative of the fact that we didn't need to go to the church as what I used to know. People would go to the church and, what do you call it? Go and sanctify the body. Hi, guy. Anyway, ne? But Mara, how do you sanctify a dead body? I don't know. That's a topic for another day. Anyway, so thank God we didn't need to go to the church. The service was done in the house, and it seems like that's what people are doing now, which makes a whole lot of sense. So we can save lots of costs and time. I mean, look at all the cars that need to take people, the people that need to go to church, and the preparations, and coming back, and then having to go to the cemetery. So the service was done in the home, in our home, and yeah, in the tent outside, our respect outside. So yeah, I was very appreciative of how things were done, you know, of the progress of how things are being done and stuff like that. So yeah, there's certain things that I really picked up and I was like, okay, this is interesting. But when we do come back, we will talk about some of the things that I did pick up that I was just questioning. And I have questions to ask you and I, like, why in the world are we still doing this? But for now, for a short commercial break and a musical break, and we'll get into talking about those things that we're still doing in regards to funerals that I think we should put away. So stay tuned. It's more interesting stuff coming your way. So the first part was just the story telling of what actually transpired. Deep things coming your way right after. See you.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onoreta timwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be.
Welcome back, and of course tonight we are reflecting on my grandfather's funeral, everything that transpired, or some of the stuff that transpired. I could only be in one place. I might not have seen everything and had everything. Now, one thing about death is that death is a common occurrence in the world. Of course, people of all kinds die, sinners and saints alike. And this means you will experience deaths around you, including those of your family members, church members, colleagues, friends, and other people in your society. You too will die in your time, and before your time comes, one reason or the other will make you attend burial ceremonies. Yes. Now, let's reflect on what a burial ceremony or characteristics or descriptions of what a burial ceremony is. One, it is a house of mourning. Yeah, it is a house of mourning. Here, where the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. You know, there's actually a scripture that says the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth, or in the house of partying, or in the house of rejoicing. You know, but the heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. Because when one attends the burial ceremony of someone who has died, he or she is supposed to change his or her life and his or her foolish ways through meditating on the events surrounding the death. Perhaps this person died in illness, or this person died in robbery, or this person died in, I don't know, whatever. So you meditate on that and just ponder on it to say, reflect on your own life. It is now, but nowadays it is now turned into a house of celebration. And of course, it's a house of joy where various kinds of foods and drinks are being served, like as if it's in a feast, you know. But it's supposed to be a house of a burial house. It's supposed to be a house of meditating. And of course, you can at that point, you know, celebrate the life of your loved ones, you know, in a way of memory, about their death, about their life, how they used to live their life, but in a calm manner, not in a sort of party way where you are now, you know, putting on music and dancing and saying we are celebrating this person. No, like that you're taking away of what actually a house of mourning is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a house of sadness, you know, but nowadays it's turned into people being served alcohol and people made to get drunk, you know, eating and drinking and dancing and forgetting, you know, the godly sorrow that is meant to change one's life through mourning the dead. Okay. And now it is also a house of sadness. Of course, you'll be sad. I mean, someone has died, you know, it is a house of sorrow where people put on sorrowfulness and sober attitude. You're supposed to be calm. Your character must be calm. You know, I was taking pictures, at my grandfather's house, and in my mind, I was just asking myself, am I really as calm as I should be? You know, you move around, you take a video and stuff like that. But it's supposed to be a house of sober attitude where you are sober, you are calm, you know, and it is a house of rebuke also where you can get rebuke. I remember somebody actually spoke out and said, the way my grandfather raised us up, you know, with counsel and godly counsel, and he will whip a child, you know, for misconduct and misbehaving. My grandfather was also not the type of person that they'll go to cooker shops with my grandmother. That was never done. That was not done. And so even we ourselves, when you have been sent to, you know, to the cooker shops to go buy something, you are expected to buy it and come back home. So it was one of those things that the lady said, those of us who have kids, you know, we should, what do you call it? Emulate my grandfather's, you know, disciplinary character, train up our children, you know, in a godly manner, train up our children, you know, with discipline and not just leave them to be wayward. So it's also not a house, and it is not a house of feasting where people eat, drink and dance with joy and shouting. And it's definitely not a house of laughter where people crack jokes and laugh to forget their sorrows and the lessons that they are supposed to learn from them. Of course, by this, I don't mean you should just be, you know, frowning and whatnot and very serious. It's not that you cannot, reflect on the things that, the loved one used to do. Perhaps, you know, but obviously in another secluded place where you can also talk about, you know, some of the funny things that maybe the person used to do, and you reflect on them and what impact this had on you. Yeah. So it's not a place of careless living where people commit various kinds of things. Come and corner one young girl. You know, nowadays youth corner one boy corner one girl, they in the corner and they are busy doing other things. It's supposed to be a funeral house. It's supposed to be, you know, a place of mourning, not of such things. So Yeah. Now, many have missed what burial has been ordained, or burial ceremony has been ordained to be, and what it's meant to achieve in the hearts of people. And of course, God says it is the house of mourning, and it's therefore expected that people go there to cry and to mourn. Just not this, foolish wailing. And I say foolish wailing because people have literally exaggerated it, you know, they blow it out of proportion, literally. And of course, you can understand when perhaps this is the mother of the child and the way they're crying, you know, that point when they found out is uncontrollable or whatever, when they do realize that, hey, hold on, my child is going, you know, I'm not going to see them again. Like, I remember my mom on the day of the burial, you know, my grandmother has been all well, very composed. And the day of the burial, I think when my grandmother could now see the casket, they carried her, my mom and my mom on the side and my aunt on the other side. And I for the first time, I saw my grandmother really cry like that. I've never. And there has been stuff that has been done in our house that could make my grandmother, you know, cry very bitterly like that. And still she just, you know, I saw how, and you could understand, because I mean, this is the spouse, and this is the person that she used to be with, you know, and, you know, and they live in the same house, you know, sometimes we sleep in the same room, of course, not in the same bed, really. My grandmother will be on her bed there. My grandfather will be on his, you know, sometimes he will go and get the mattress and come and lie exactly in my grandmother's room or, you know, stuff like that. And so, This is their companion, their friend, and they're gone now, you know? And my grandmother, I guess, was really reflecting on those things that, wait, we're not going to talk anymore. Should one of our kids be getting married or, you know, going through stuff in their home or their children or stuff like that? Or my grandkids getting married, you know, that type of thing. I can't share it with him anymore. We can't talk about it, and we can't just, you know, have a normal conversation and talk about how we're going to plan it or what are we going to do, as old as they were. They had their kettles and their stuff, and they would talk, you know, and, you know, sometimes that reality that, hey, wait, my husband is not here anymore. And and all of us actually had the impression, you know, foolish impression that probably my grandmother was going to go first before our grandfather. It was really sort of like a major surprise to grandfather go first. And I now realize and reflect on it. You know, there are certain things that God allows for a very good reason, for a very good purpose. I think if my grandmother had ever died before my grandfather, it probably wouldn't be so long that he's probably gone, because sort of the loneliness, you know, and how he was really used to my grandmother. And yeah, and I feel like for my grandmother, of course, you know, for a woman, it's a bit different for a man. I just feel like that, you know. I don't know. But yeah. Now, in today's cultures and today's culture, customs and tradition and churches, they've turned burial ceremony into a place of feasting, into a place of party and music, you know, worldly music, to say he loved what song by who, Rock It Up, and yeah, that's the song that people are playing, Rock It Up, blah, 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 you know, stuff like that, you know, this type of rock music, maybe, you know, hard music. No, man. It's still a time of soberness. It's still a time of reflecting that, hey, hold on, this person is gonna be here again, you know? Yeah. And one thing also that should come to our minds when someone dies is asking yourself questions like, if I die now, where will I go? You know, you reflect on, will my soul make heaven? Is my lifestyle the type of life that I want to be remembered for? Do I want to be remembered for, you know, for the type of things that I'm doing now, maybe the way I speak to people, my behavior, my character, or I'm always somebody who is drunk in the streets and have to be picked up and taken home? Is that how I want people to remember me? Or there are certain things that I ought to do and ought to stop doing, you know, stuff like that. You know, it's really time of soberness and reflecting on yourselves. Now, there are many reasons why people sorrow over the dead, and why the spirit of soberness should be applied in the time of the funeral. And some of the following is that some of the following reasons may account for reasons of people sorrowing over the dead, being sorrowful, of course, over their loved ones, you know, not being there anymore. Now, number one would be that their loved ones shall not see them on earth, is either him or her on earth anymore. You know, they won't be able to see him anymore. So you won't be able to see this person anymore, you know? Perhaps you may not be very close to the person that died, but their particular loved ones won't be able to see them anymore. They're gone, you know? Like for me, having, you know, I thought to myself, oh my God, you mean, you know, generally when you travel from Windhoek to the north, first thing when you arrive in your grandfather's house, you will see grandfather, you will see grandmother, and they'll be so happy to see you, you know, the two of them. And now that you actually ponder on it, you realize, hey, hold on, I actually won't be able to see my grandfather again when I go to the north. And that reality kind of like just hits close to say, you know, yeah, I guess it's true, hey, you know. And then, so their contribution to the blessing of their family, whether to their society, to their church, to the community, will not continue anymore. If this person used to be a school teacher, that benefit won't be there anymore. If they used to have maybe even a soup kitchen, that benefit won't be there anymore. They won't be able to do those things anymore. And for some people, they go into suffering for their permanent absence. You know, let's say, for instance, this man was a breadwinner, and a husband to the children who have maybe 5 toddlers or below the age of 15. I don't know. Okay, not 15 is not a toddler, but let me say, yeah, it was a husband who died of a particular woman, and she's now a widow, and he was the breadwinner, and they had 5 children. You know, the family may go into suffering, you know, because of their permanent absence. They are no longer there to give that meaningful contribution. And even the fact that the woman becomes a widow and his wife will now suffer widowhood, it becomes a challenge, you know, raising up the children, because the children now become fatherless. And, you know, back then when the wife would say, I'll report you to your father for doing this, she can't say that anymore because he's not anymore. And a lot of widows also, some neighborhood people, neighborhood men want to take advantage of them because she's become a widow. And also you begin to realize that, hey, hold on, the husband used to be a protection to this woman, because a man wouldn't just come to her house anyhow. And for some, if they are actually not strong enough, or perhaps the neighbor man will say, I will pay your children's school fee, you know, if you allow me to sleep with you. You know, that's how some widows go into prostitution. Of course, prostitution is not just when people go to, you know, in the night and stand by the road and stuff like that. That too, where the woman now begins to give her body to this man so that he can pay the children's school fees and stuff like that. Another one also comes and stuff like that. So it actually brings a lot of stuff to the house. And also his good work in the society shall not continue. Like I spoke about, if she or he was a teacher, or maybe was a Sunday school teacher, or maybe they used to have a shop, you know, where they used to make fat cakes, and, you know, I don't know, just something that they used to do, that which they used to contribute, whether big or small, will not continue in the society anymore. Even if they just used to clean a particular yard. And for the mere fact that they're no more there, who's going to do that again? Or even if they used to do a particular something, and they themselves used to do it very good, and the fact that they're not there anymore, nobody else is going to do it, you know? Yeah, so really, yeah. And also another thing, the person might have died untimely due to some unfortunate incident, maybe like a car accident, was unexpected, a short illness, you know, hence people mourn over him or her for his or his most misfortune in life. Yeah, and if the person died after a long sickness or hazard, some people mourn over them in pity for what they suffered. You know, and if the person died young, people mourn because he did not live his or her full years and so has contributed little, perhaps, or nothing to his family and the society in general. You know, there are just some of the reasons why people go into sorrow over the dead, over their loved ones. So, yeah, there are many, many reasons why people sorrow, you know, and yeah. So now, before I actually get said, let me just talk about that partially and move on to something else. Now, one thing that actually, bothered me. Hi. Yeah, I don't know. You know, when the family was contributing the money for the preparation of his funeral, and I came to see how people prepared money, preparation in, the one that on the group, you know, that was put up the, and the total contribution when I counted, but then that was not on the last day when I counted. I just counted, I think it was on the day of the memorial. And still, you know, people, some people give that particular day, even in the evening. And some people, you know, give things the later. I feel like they were just not updating us anymore afterwards. I don't know whether they did now again, but I later counted up to 74,000 something Namibian dollars contributions for my grandfather's funeral. And apparently the undertaker or the casket, the coffin was going to cost 28,000 Namibian dollars. And I was like, what in the world? And the tent was going to cost 15,000 Namibian dollars. Hi. And I was like, what? And this is exactly one of the reasons, one of the pointers I want us to talk about, to see why are we in the 21st century still spending so much money on a coffin? On a coffin. Now, as much as I love my grandfather, please, I love is not shown in buying an expensive coffin. Why are we still claiming that we are educated, we are in the first century, we are, you know, not primitive, we're doing things differently compared to how it was done in the past? Of course, back then people used to do certain things for lack of knowledge and stuff like that in this 21st century. And you're still, and of course, some people may say, but actually somebody actually told me that 28,000 is nothing, you know? Happy, $28,000 on a coffin is nothing. People spend up to $50,000, $150,000 on a coffin that is going underground, that the ants are going to eat up. Like, what is wrong with you? Why in the world? I'm like, why are we doing that? If it was up to me, of course, I'm just one grandchild, no mouth to speak. What can you even say? Huh? You want to, I don't know, disrespect the people, the elders? What are you trying to say? You know, but I'm bringing this out so that you tomorrow should, you know, you be in the position to say, and you have a mouth to open up, unless you're also not getting it, not understanding it the way I am getting it. Like, why are we spending so much money on the dead? Huh? Why are we spending much money on the dead? You know, there's something that I really love saying is, flowers are for the living, not the dead. When a person is dead, they can no longer feel the love you're showing them. They are dead. They can no longer feel, you know, do things that you want to do for your loved ones, for them to feel loved while they are alive. Not go spend a lot, not to go and spend a lot of money on a funeral, on a dead person who has, I don't care how rich they were. I really don't. You know, I was actually talking to one of the cab drivers before I went to the funeral. And I was telling him how people are contributing money and how it was, we were notified that the coffin is going to be $28,000 and now the tent is going to be $15,000. And, you know, before they even said how much it's going to be, I was like, generally, I contribute for things that are worthy. Yeah, that's me. So I was like, okay, I generally don't contribute. You know, there can be some stuff and I generally don't contribute. So I was like, let me contribute, you know. I remember it was even payday. So I sent my $500 to contribute for my grandfather's wedding. I was like, oh, maybe this $500 to go add to whatever money is going to be there, to go buy cool drinks, maybe to go buy food. Oh, another thing I was very appreciative of is that they didn't buy alcohol. Maybe they did. There was some, maybe small, I don't know. But I didn't really come across that. Oh, wait, I did see two people drinking beer, small cans of beer, but it was not a major, it was not a focus, thing. And that's really good because, I mean, it's a funeral house, not a place where people should come and get drunk and come and talk rubbish, you know? So I really appreciate that. So, honestly speaking, when I was telling this cab driver and I was like, you know, this is how much apparently the coffin is going to be and da 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 da. And when I did mention that, I contributed $500. He was like, you are part of the problem, my sister. You are part of the problem. So you shouldn't even open your mouth and complain because you are part of the bigger picture. Like the fact that you are not supposed to contribute. You should have just not, you know, because and it makes sense. And I don't know if you sitting at home actually get it like that as well. Like I'm asking myself, why are we spending so much money on the dead? When the people, and you'll be surprised that there's a cousin or there's a family member whose water has been cut off and they will not contribute to go and pay that person's water bill or perhaps medical bill. Somebody needs to go for a certain treatment and it requires so much money. Make a group there to say family members, let's all contribute $100, at least when they will not show up. But let that person die now. Everyone has money in their pockets all of a sudden. Someone's contributing $300. Are we contributing money out of a guilty feeling? You know, because you're guilty. You're not actually on good terms with your cousin, your sister, your whoever. And now you feel like this is going to make up for it? No, that's so wrong. Or are we contributing for show off, you know? Because your sister contributed $5,000 and your cousin contributed $10,000 and your auntie contributed $5,000 and who contributed $4,000. And you also feel like, you know what, if I let me contribute so they can see that I also have money. Is that perhaps one of the reasons why we're doing such things? Because I can't understand why we in this century, have you ever thought to ponder where the coffin actually goes? I mean, why would you, that's like taking money from the bank, y'all, and opening up a hole in the ground and putting all the money in the ground, you know, for the ants to eat it up. That's a complete wastage of money. If it was, and from what I had, since you are a pensioner, the government offers, a coffin of 2,500 coming to verify. That's the information I got. And some people then say, no, just give us the 2,500. We'll go and top up our money now to buy a coffin. And that's how they buy expensive coffins. For what? If it was me, I would take that $2,500 or that coffin. I don't know what. And I would go and bury my loved one. Because why would I spend so much money on my loved, on the dead as much as they were my loved ones? Honestly speaking, if I was married to a rich man, however rich he may be, and this is reality, you know, for me, there is no way I am going to take my poor rich husband's money to put it in the ground. Let the family say, no, this widow, she didn't have a husband. Must my love be proved in buying a coffin? shouldn't my love be proved by the lifestyle I live with this person, how I look after them? Let's say, for instance, maybe the person was sick, how I was there looking after them, taking care of them, this. I must go and buy an expensive coffee so I can please people to show them that, no, I actually loved my husband. That's why I'm actually buying him an expensive coffin. Or, in fact, I've concluded, if at one point I ever become a rich woman, if I ever at one point become a rich woman, I will make sure I write my will to say, please do not bury me in an expensive coffin, please. And by expensive, I mean, if you can find a coffin of $2,500, $3,000, even $1,000, please bury me in it. So I would write a will so that my family members cannot, you know, come and see. And I'm getting a caller. Oh, I lost you right there. But yeah, our studio line is open. Please come through and air your opinions. And I don't know whether you're coming to tell me that happy you have a wrong mindset or you are for with what I'm saying. But 0832-888-401 is the number in studio. 0832-888-401 is the number in studio. Please come through. Our studio line is very much open for you to also dialogue with me. So yeah. Should I ever, I will write a will and I will say it must be enforced, because why will my poor children stay hungry, you know, and go hungry, and perhaps there's nobody to pay their school fees while they bury me in an expensive coffin? In fact, if I could, you know, write something to say, if I fall dead now, please, my family members, do not, and I mean do not, you know how they say, respect the dead, or what do you call it? Yeah, something like that. So respect me by not burying me in an expensive coffin. That would be an insult. Not really, truly speaking, that would be an insult to me. That would be an insult to me and everything that I advocate for, because why would there be living people on this earth that have no food to eat, no clothes to wear? Probably my kids will be suffering a couple of years from there, or maybe months after, maybe in the beginning, somebody will be taking care of them, and I don't know, they'll be needing this, they'll be needing shoes. I don't know, I'm just saying. And here they have spent all the money, they wasted the money in buying me an expensive coffin and burying me, you know, and buying a tent and buying all these things and whatever, and spending on my funeral. At the end of the day, it benefits who? Who does it actually benefit? Why my poor children are suffering? Ah, no. Or my mom, my sister, whatever. No. Mm-mm. That would be a terrible insult to myself. Yeah. It really would be. And from what I hear, Errol Pukavets was not buried in an expensive coffin. You know, it's a tradition and custom of the Jews. They don't bury, you know, and you know, and these are things that, yeah. Of course, there are certain, maybe when you become sort of like a president thing, it doesn't align. It's not the same thing, because now you become a property of the state, I guess, you know, so people are entitled to you, and there is no way they can just take, you know, one very cheap, but yeah, I don't know, but also mustn't be very expensive. Okay. Must just be fine, polish it. In fact, you know, varnish it nicely if need be, and bury the person. Huh? And let's use the money for other things. Let's put the money for good use. Not take our money and put it in the grave where it's going to be eaten up by ants and moths, or what do they call it? No. These are things that we need to be done away with. And funny enough, I've always been an advocate of this. I remember when I was working as a teenager as a waitress, at one restaurant, having this conversation with my colleagues. They were very offended, you know, very, very offended. And these are also conversations that I would have sometimes with my mom. You know, we will jokingly speak about it, you know, to say, there's no way I'm burying my loved ones in an expensive coffin, even if they left me with a lot of money. No offense, I won't insult them like that. If that's what they want, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. So it's something that I've always, and I remember a cousin of mine who's a lawyer. I remember also when I was a teenager, and I think that's where my mindset actually opened up to this whole reality, where we were talking about how people will spend so much money on funeral arrangements, on coffins, on this, and I only spoke about the coffin. What about the tombstone? That one is another 30,000. That one is another lot of money. So put everything together. No. These are things we need to talk about. I need to understand why we are still in this era. Why are we still in the era of show off and impress people so that people go and say, this one was buried this one was done, this was done. And so what? It doesn't change the fact that the person is gone, you know? I mean, let's make comparison of a rich person, or perhaps do rich people even do that? Or is just us poor people who do it? Do they take all the money? Like, do rich people take their money and say, we're going to buy this person? I mean, I feel like rich people who acquired their finances, legitimately and not fraudulently. Because, you know, when you haven't sweat for the money, there's a way you'll just squander it. You won't value it. You won't, you know, care about it. You will spend it anyhow, you know. But for those who have acquired their finances the hard way, the hardworking way, do they really go about spending so much money on funerals? Do they make exaggerated, flamboyant arrangements, buy coffins that are very expensive, and also tombstones that are very expensive? Do they do that? I don't think so. But then why are we the ones who are the ones who are going out and taking all the money and putting it on a grave, on a gravestone, putting it inside the grave? Why are we doing that? Is there a particular reason why we should? Because this is a complete waste of money. It's really something to ponder about. Given the situation, what would you do? And when you reason to say, it's my last respect. What last respect? The person is gone, unfortunately. As much as you loved them, they are gone. And they cannot feel the things that you're doing for them. Oh, and there's another thing that I need to address. You know, I specifically put up on my status a couple of days after the funeral. You know, I see a lot of people write, rest in peace, or say that over dead people. I say to myself, I can't do that. I personally myself, I never say rest in peace to anyone because I don't know where they are. Maybe where they are, there's no peace. You understand? So I can't just in my mouth utter, so I better just not say anything. It's funny how we all think when everybody dies, you know, and I want to believe that every one of us, you know how you would ask somebody, do you want to go to heaven? They say, yes, I want to go to heaven when I die. You know, people believe, a lot of people believe that there is heaven, and a lot of people also believe that there is hell. But it's funny how when a person dies, we automatically think, boom, this person went to heaven. What makes you think they went to heaven? What about all the things that they used to do, the wrongs that they used to do? And all of a sudden, we just speak about them in a very good manner. We don't talk about the wrong things that they used to do. They've become saints now. They've become people who never made any mistakes. No, that's telling lies. That's just being untruthful, you know? If the person used to be a thief, if the person used to, you know, do wrong things and just scold people and do this and shout at people and what, of course, you can talk about it in a very calm way to say, okay, this person was like this. We must not paint them as if they are now holier, you know, like as if they were saints. They never did anything wrong and automatically they had resting in peace. What about all the atrocities that they have done? I see somebody was calling again, but unfortunately, I don't know what's really up. It rings just once, it seems, and yeah, but do try again. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. And of course, we are reflecting on my grandfather's funeral, bringing the realities and the questions and the whys that I feel like should accompany nowadays funerals. Why are we still doing the things that were being done back then? And why are we exaggerating even the more now? You know, I feel like now we have made it even the more worse. And also of these things of policy covering, funeral cover and stuff. Me, I don't want anyone to cover me for their funeral. I don't. Because you can't trust people anymore, you know? It's as if they desire you to die, so they're going to claim money. Mm-mm. Neither do I actually want anyone to cover my children. No. Please. Because you're just wondering. In this world of greediness, people just want money at any cost. At any expense whatsoever. Phew. They couldn't care less about the next person. They're not bothered about their feelings. They're not bothered about, you know, what they're just not bothered. They just care about their gains and their gains. And, you know, I won't be surprised if some people make funerals a time for them to benefit money. You know, a time for them to pocket money. I mean, with all the contributions coming in, and there may be those who are responsible for covering the cost and this and this and that. People nowadays have no fear to even steal money that was meant for the funeral preparations. It's just coming to my mind now that I speak about policies and whatnot. I'm sure people don't even have that remorse. They don't even have that fear. They don't even have that concern. They're capable of doing what not? Where are we actually heading to? Where is society heading to? What are we becoming? Because certainly that which is happening nowadays is worrisome, you know? It's something to ponder about, to ask yourself, to wonder, wait, hold on. But yeah, oh well. Let's pause here for now and take a musical break, and then we'll be back to continue. Stay with us right here on Life Lessons.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushe ndife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali hea di nola natu. Heari bali no heari ileko derewa hora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane egelefer the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Oh, much more left to say if you were with me today, face to face. Never knew I could hurt like this, and every day life was all right. Wish you could talk to you for a while, wish you could try not to cry as time goes by. And it's true that you reached a better place, the light in the world.
As much as, of course, we ponder and reflect on the things that I think we should do away with, of course, we will not shy away from the fact that the death of a loved one really requires us to be there for those that are mourning, for those that have hurt, that are hurting, for those that are sad, that for those that have lost their loved one and that person that was really close to them. It's also good to attend the burial ceremony of a loved one and of family members or maybe family or friends. To visit a bereaved family is really a commendable thing because it offers us opportunity to comfort the sorrowful by mourning and weeping with them. And therefore, let us as much as it is possible, you know, go personal and practical in the comfort of our fellow friends, colleagues, cousins in times of where they are grieving a loved one. Of course, there are times where the circumstances may not require our personal presence, but in that case, we should try and delegate others to do it for us. Yeah. And not only should we visit, you know, the home or the bereaved home for condolences, we should be there in the right spirit to meditate on our own lives, on the time of our own death, and on eternal life or eternal damnation hereafter before all men. Yeah. So it's good to go there with comforting words where you can comfort them and even take them something. You know how our culture, the people that are mourning are the ones going out to make sure that we that are coming to comfort them have eaten well, have done this. But we should also go, you know, perhaps go with something special that they would appreciate. Sometimes it can be a blanket, you know, for warmth. They might actually hold on to it. You know, this small blankets. Yeah, like you could just take that to them. You never know. It might offer some sort of comfort in a way to them. And another thing also, I know we also get busy with our own stuff. Because I still remember the death of a particular man in my street. I think it was now a year ago. Yeah. It's been over a year now, I believe. And the widow is just there in my street. And of course, I used to go to her here and there. But with time, I became so occupied, busy with my own kids as well and my own life. And so I barely make time to see her. And I remember one day she was like, "You have neglected me, you've forgotten me." And then I came to realize, you know, sometimes how we always expect others to be there for us. Sometimes we forget that they may be going through their own challenges. It might not be the death of a loved one, but you might just never know what internal challenges they may be going through. You know, what battles they may be fighting. And you know, sometimes some people are not pretentious. They appear very strong on the outside. Not because maybe they're pretending, but because that's generally who they are, but they're fighting their own battles. So I feel like sometimes we really expect so much from people and we feel like they were not there for you. You are not there for me, you know. For instance, let me say, maybe I lost a loved one. And a particular friend of mine, I felt like they were not really there for me as they should have. Only to find out a couple of years later on, maybe when we are talking and you open up and say, "I feel like you were not really there for me when I needed you." And then you now hear this person say, "Yeah, but did you know that the time when you lost maybe your loved one or your spouse, your child, I had a miscarriage. And of course, you didn't know that I was pregnant. And I didn't tell you because people mourn differently. Maybe I wanted to keep it to myself. I didn't want the questions." Then you're like, "Oh, I didn't know." You see, hence why it's very important that we don't conclude and rush to conclusion, you know, rush to say, to accuse and point fingers. You just never know what another person is going through or their reasons for them not showing up and not being there for you as you had expected them. So that's just some of the things that I think we should also ponder on when we do think about who and who was not there for us. Yeah. And also appreciate those that are there for us, that do make time for us, that actually do show up. Yeah. You know, there are some people also, we should also respect the wishes of, you know, a bereaving family. You know, some among them might not want people, you know, might not want a lot of people, may want to be to themselves, to keep to themselves for that time. We should also respect that. People are different. People mourn differently, you know. Maybe seeing a lot of people might trigger, or I don't know. For some of them, they might actually want to be on their own. So we shouldn't conclude to say they're wrong people, or they're selfish, or they're whatever. we should allow them to mourn the way they prefer to. And especially for widows, they need to be checked up on. I mean, for a widow who was used to having their spouse, when they could hear maybe noise at the gate, they could wake up the spouse and say, go check, or maybe if it is the male, if it's a female spouse who passed on, they were used to them cooking for them, washing their clothes, and now things change, it becomes very, of course, it becomes challenging, So even to just offer an ear. I mean, this person was used to sleeping in the same bed with their spouse, or perhaps a couple that's mourning a child, but then you should also be very careful and very cautious about the blame game. For some people, it might become an opportunity for blaming one another, blaming the other one for your child's death. And maybe if that is you and you became isolated from your spouse, I would say, think about it and ponder in it to see if he or she, if the tables were reversed, would you appreciate that? Would you appreciate if they were sort of like blaming you? Sometimes you say, if you were not, for instance, maybe they died in their car or maybe in a car accident and that particular person was driving. There are certain things that sometimes are unavoidable, As much as you wish you could avoid them, however careful you may have been, it was still going to happen. Yeah, it was still going to happen. Hence why we really shouldn't blame one another and shift blame and point fingers and accuse one another as well. Accuse one another. People are crying over their loved ones. You're busy accusing them that maybe they are the reason for the person's death. But sometimes you can see so clearly that this person had a chronic illness. And even if it's not so clear like that, why should we go about accusing people and making statements that are just so hurtful that we don't even have evidence to, Again, in this scenario, if the tables were turned to you, how would you take it? Would you appreciate it? Of course not. Would you like that? Of course not. You wouldn't. Yeah. And also at this point, I should also reflect on the fact that when a loved one has died, and yes, I still acknowledge that we mourn differently, different mourning stages for everyone, but may not put a halt on your life. It might for some time, yeah? And it's okay to mourn, but don't let it completely put a halt on your life for you to see you are not going to do this again. You're not going to go out again. You're not going to give yourself time to heal, yeah? But don't say or don't deliberately make choices whereas to you feel guilty, perhaps the person will be unhappy. Maybe, for example, for a spouse whose spouse now passed on and they refuse to get married again because they feel like they feel guilty, And this is reality. People really get to feel certain or even have certain thoughts like that. Like a particular widow was telling me that she feels like she hurt his feelings. And I'm like, well, honey, he's gone. He has no feelings. He can't, you need to go on with your life. Yeah. And also this thing of being so judgmental towards people that lose their spouses and getting married after a year, maybe, or even in 2 years' time, and people feel like, no, you should have mourned at least for a longer period of time. Is that really nice? Of course not. who really gets to put a time? Who knows? And then you find people where they both lost their spouses, they were both widows, and they meet, and they can go ahead and get married if they want to, without people actually making them, you know, question why the wife is getting married. And I think society tends to accept the men getting married again after a year, but not the woman. And that's just so wrong. Who gets to determine when and how who should get married, and how fast enough or how slow enough? Because, I mean, every person's journey is just completely different. Maybe that person came to serve their purpose, and they have fulfilled their purpose, and they have died. And now another person is coming in their life to help them fulfill another journey, another milestone, another purpose, you know, that could be very beneficial to both, not just both people and their immediate family members, but very beneficial to society, very beneficial to the country. Who knows? These two people are going to start a business, you know, that's going to yield beautiful fruits to the benefit of a lot of people, you know? So really, I think there's a bigger picture to look at than just the overall surface of what we think traditionally is right, culturally is right. Of course, we appreciate certain parts of our cultures, but let's also not shy away from the fact that sometimes culturally certain things are just not the norm, not right. Let me not really go into trying to remember about when, because I'm not very familiar with it. I've just had it when maybe a father dies and the siblings come to the funeral. The next day they are told to eat something liver in the aspect of bad luck won't follow them, blah, 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 stuff like that. You know, those are certain things that I personally wouldn't partake of, regardless if it's, you know, it was my loved one. Mm-mm. You know, and for you, if you are the person who's very, has high moral standards, who has very strong faith, that no, there are certain things that we need to question. We shouldn't just be going with the flow to say, this is how things are done. But you have to ask questions, but why? Why? What's the benefit of it? Or what is, if should I not do it, then what? You know, so that you can make your own reasoning and not just do things out of fear. And I feel like that's what a lot of us actually do. We do things just out of fear because parents say it, and I don't want to defile or defy my parents' direction. I think it has to come to this point where we really ask the questions, the why, the how, the when. Of course, you know, don't remove an old ancient mark or boundary, something like that. But there are certain things that are very culturally, that are cultural and traditional things or cultural things that are very beneficial to society as well. But I said there's certain other cultural and traditional things that we need to put away, whether it's in terms of burial or after the funeral, whatnot. Yeah, certain things that we just have to put away that are just not godly, that are just not making sense commonly. They're just not... I don't know how to put it. Like, if, for instance, maybe they have to use a blade to cut you, blood must oust out, because your grandfather died or your uncle died or your mom, I don't know, this type of things, or your dad. Those are things that we need to question to see, what exactly are you asking me to do? Yeah, things like that. And other things that are probably done that I have no idea of. Now, before that, I actually want to play you a song that came to my mind. I remember when a schoolmate, when we were in high school, she lost her dad. And I remember when the dad used to drop her off, and she was colored, okay, and the dad was very dark in complexion. So I had, her mom was colored. Yeah. And the dad was a Damara. And so she was very light, very white. And the dad was very dark. And so the men used to drop her off at school. Yeah. And then after some time we had her dad died. She was very sorrowful, of course. You can imagine your dad used to bring you to school. He can no longer bring you to school. Of course, it's sad, you know. These are some of the things that I'm talking about. He can no longer contribute to the society. Those good things that his loved ones appreciated and loved him for, they can't continue anymore. So, yeah, I remember one time we were singing the song. Yeah, and my other friend knows it very well, so she was already singing it. She was singing it along. It's Dance With My Father Again. So let's take a listen to that and ponder it on it. And for those of you who've also lost your dads, I hope this today's topic is not to rekindle old wounds. Yeah. But if it has, I hope you reflect on those beautiful memories. Okay?
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
From sunrise to supper time, Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth one plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
Namib Mills, proudly Namibian,
passionately feeding the nation.
Namib Mills, feeding the nation.
Before life removed all the innocence, my father would lift me high and dance with my mother and me, and then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then up the stairs he would carry me, and I knew for sure I was loved. If I could get another chance, another walk, another dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. How I'd love, love to dance with my father again. Ooh. When I and my mother would disagree, to get my way I would run from her to him. He'd make me laugh just to comfort me, yeah, yeah. Then finally make me do just what my mama said. Later that night when I was asleep, he left a dollar
under my sheet. Never dreamed that he would be gone from me. If I could steal one final glance, one final step, one final dance with him, I'd play a song that would never, ever end. 'Cause I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. Sometimes I'd listen outside her door, and I'd hear how my mother cried for him. I'd pray for her even more than me. I'd pray for her even more than me. She loved. I know you don't do it usually, but dear Lord, she's dying to dance with my father again.
Every night I fall asleep, and this is all I ever dream.
I sure hope that you, as you listened to that song, I hope that it gave you some, it brought back some memories, good memories, not bad ones, yeah. And I think at this point, I would say with more emphasis, yeah, flowers are for the living and not the dead. Let's love our loved ones while they're still here. Let's show them love where they're still alive, and not just our loved ones, our colleagues, our friends, our neighbors. Let's interact with people in a manner that, even if it's ever going to be the last time, you won't be going on a guilty trip, you know, where you're pondering, I wish I'd given them more love. I wish I'd been there for them. I wished I'd done this and that for them. And therefore, having to now go alternative ways of trying to make up for their existence, of how they existed before, of having been your, you know, in your vicinity or in your life, but you didn't offer them the hand that they needed, the counseling that they needed, the shoulder that they needed, you know. And it's especially, I think, very bad when the person committed suicide. I think that the one is really, that's where you, when you ask yourself, you know how we would say, open up to people, like, why didn't they open up to me? Why didn't I? But the question is, were you somebody that they could open up to? Did you offer yourself like that? You know, were you free to say, you know what, if happy you're ever going through something and you need a shoulder to lean on, or just by your character, not just by your words? You know, I remember a particular colleague that I could still reach out to when they were no longer my colleague anymore, to say, you know what, I want to talk to you, and so you can offer me your advice. And I was so broken, And I really needed a shoulder to lean on. But I felt like I could lean on this person. You understand? Not because they ever opened their mouth and say, "Happy, you can come to me and lean on me when you need it." But because their actions were always like that. Their actions were like, "I'm an open door policy, Happy. You can come whenever you need to lean on. When things get overwhelming, you can, you know, I'm right here for you." Sometimes it's not with our own words. Sometimes it's by our actions, you know. It's by the way we behave ourselves and we put ourselves out there. So I guess as I leave this message with you, I want you to reflect on, are you making life easier for the next person? Or are you the type of person when your loved one is no longer around, you want to wail and cry out of guilt, out of lack of giving love when the person was still around? So let's appreciate our parents. For those of you who don't have your parents, appreciate that aunt. Appreciate that complete stranger who became family. Appreciate that colleague who looks after you, checks up on you, stands in for you when you need it. Appreciate your neighbor, you know, because when you do hear that, hey, hold on, your neighbor has died, you know that you've lost something, you know. You can no longer freely take your key to that house because you knew that one person was the reason why you could say, hey, hold on, I'm going to the village. Please do look after my home. Please do check out my home, you know. Let's look after our little ones with love. And of course, sometimes we scold them for the things they do, but sometimes we don't ponder on the fact that they might not be here always, okay? Even those little babies of ours. Some of us may lose them at the age of 15, at 12, and that's just how life is. And when it happens to you, don't be asking those questions, why me? Yeah? Don't be asking, why me? Because if it isn't you, then who else it is? And they will still be going through the same emotions you are, maybe even worse. So let's reflect on those and let's show love. Let's ponder on life. And also think about what legacy we want to leave behind. What would you want to be remembered for? And myself, I'll be doing the same as well. Reflecting on, well, Happy, what would you want to be remembered for? Yeah. And now with that being said, we have officially come to the conclusion of today's episode of Life Lessons. And of course, it was a mixture of this and this and that, of questionings and pondering and storytelling and all that. And it was, I'm glad we had this conversation. And I think I had it all by myself. You didn't actually get to call in, but I sure hope that you do so next time. Now for me, I will say good night. Have yourself a wonderful evening and the rest of your weekend. Rest well and resume back on Monday for work. Good night from me, Dafa Happy Juju. It's goodbye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetida oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetida o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa lokumona oijamwiri nawa Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onore tatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko derewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu atatu, o mafilane, Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So, not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.